This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehi Suhib. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
I think generally I would share, and many Africans would share, the sense of relief that we're coming to the end of an embarrassing and I think somewhat of a distasteful process.
That's Jaki Sillier of South Africa's Institute for Security Studies commenting on the U.S. presidential election. Details coming up.
Also, an 8-year-old child and one UN peacekeeper were killed by a bomb attack in the eastern DRC this morning. And the International Organization for Migration is assessing the health of more than 1,700 migrants in a Libyan detention center.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, it's Election Day in the United States, and tonight we'll find out who the next president will be, Democrats Hillary Clinton or Republican Donald Trump. But while millions are casting ballots today, what's known as early voting has been going on for weeks in many states. In fact, more than 46 million Americans cast their votes before today. More women than men took part in early voting this year. Results from the 50 U.S. states and the District of Columbia will not be announced until after polls close in each one. By 8 p.m. Washington time, 1 GMT, polls will be closed in much of the eastern and central parts of the country. Those states account for more than half of the 538 electoral votes at stake. A candidate needs 270 electoral votes to win.
Both Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump campaigned for votes in several states yesterday on the eve of perhaps the most divisive and polarizing election in modern U.S. history. Polls show Clinton with a modest but steady lead, both nationally and in several key battleground states that will largely determine the outcome of today's voting. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more on the candidates and their final push for support.
Make noise!
Hillary Clinton began her last day on the campaign trail in Pennsylvania, a state she's counting on to become the next president. After a long and divisive campaign, Clinton delivered a more upbeat message on the eve of the election.
Anger is not a plan, my friends. If we're going to harness our energy and try to overcome our problems, then we got to start talking to each other again. And we have to get good ideas wherever they come from.
Clinton got a boost Sunday when the FBI cleared her for a second time in connection with her use of a private email server while Secretary of State. Clinton had plenty of help in the final hours of campaigning, including from President Barack Obama.
God bless these United States of America. Let's go vote.
Obama rallied supporters in Michigan, where some polls show a tightening race. Republican Donald Trump began his day in Florida, a must-win state for him if he's to defy national polls and pull off a come-from-behind victory. Trump tried to turn the latest news on the FBI and Clinton to his benefit.
Hillary Clinton is being protected by a totally rigged system. And now it's up to the American people to deliver justice at the ballot box tomorrow. That's what's going to happen.
Trump also had help from his daughter Ivanka, who campaigned in Pennsylvania.
My father is very forthright. You know where he stands.
The outcome will hinge largely on voter turnout, says strategist Matt Gammon.
You need to remind people why the other one is a worse choice than you are. And it gives everyone kind of a bad taste in their mouth, and it's not what we like to think of when we think of how campaigns are run, but unfortunately, that's just the way that this looks like it's going to end.
No matter who wins, the next president faces enormous challenges in trying to unify the country, says historian Alan Lichtman.
Assuming it's Donald Trump, he's got to way tamp down his rhetoric. He can't talk about locking up his political opponents.
But Lichtman says a Clinton victory would also be a test of her political skills.
She is going to have to come up with policies and programs that could at least attract a segment of the Republican opposition.
Democrats have shown some strengths in several states with early voting, but Trump supporters insist their passion will lead to a big turnout on Tuesday. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Thank you, Jim. Well, for an outside perspective of the U.S. presidential election, VOA's Joe DiCapua spoke with Yaki Sillier, chairman of the board at South Africa's Institute for Security Studies. From Pretoria, he gave Joe his reaction to the just-completed presidential campaign by Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think that internationally there's a sense of amazement that somebody like Donald Trump can vie for what is the most powerful position globally. And I think generally I would share, and many Africans would share, the sense of relief that we're coming to the end of an embarrassing and I think somewhat of a distasteful process. The circus has been going on for how many months? And at the end of the day, you have two candidates that neither of them appeal globally or apparently to the American public. And the one candidate appears to be a danger not only to the United States, but globally. And this is, I think, reflects that there is something fundamentally wrong in the way that the U.S. democratic system appears to be working.
Do you think that this has damaged the U.S. reputation abroad?
I do think it has. Barack Obama has done well, I think, for the U.S. and is well regarded in Africa. And I think internationally, he has pulled back from the disastrous policies of his predecessor, positioning the United States in a hugely complex and changing world. This certainly would be disruptive if Donald Trump would win. Hillary Clinton, I think generally people respect her. She was a competent Secretary of State. But there's a sense of, is this the best that the United States, the world's global power, can offer? There is a bit of a deflation in expectations from the United States globally.
Now, when you heard the rhetoric during the U.S. presidential campaign, were you surprised?
Yes, well, I think everybody was surprised at particularly the quality of the interventions from Donald Trump. This is not the kind of remarks and leadership that one would expect from somebody who aspires to, you know, the president of the United States. The remarks about Muslims, about gays, about women, and the complete ignorance about global developments and how the U.S. should act is a source of concern. We published today, actually, a piece at the Institute for Security Studies that just looked at some of the dangers should a Trump presidency come to born. I think generally we all hope that that will not happen, and indications are that it won't. But still, that somebody like that can come close to becoming U.S. president must be a source of concern globally.
You had mentioned that people were questioning the quality of the candidates and the electoral process. What in particular about the electoral process has people scratching their heads?
It seems to have devolved into a kind of a personal battle and name-calling and an absence of real considered and deliberate policy issues. And then we see that Americans themselves don't apparently take the elections that seriously. If we look at turnout, you have a Congress that is utterly, completely blocked, so very little happens. There seems to be a sense of frustration, a sense of lack of movement, of delivery in the U.S. democratic system. And all of this is just driven by money. The amounts of funding that are wasted on this kind of, I would almost say, nonsense that we see, it makes the rest of the world shake their head. Everything in the U.S. just seems to be about money and money politics and the influence of large corporations, large funders. This detracts, I think, from the essence of democracy.
Can you compare the U.S. presidential campaign of 2016 to any elections in Africa or other countries that you've studied?
Africa faces many challenges, of course, and it's easy to point fingers at the U.S. We have in Africa many elections, something like 26 this year, but very few of them would pass the standard of free, fair, and competitive elections. But in Africa, elections are serious issues because this does determine who leads our countries, and for us, government and governance is an important issue because we suffer from too little governance. In the U.S. and much of the developed world, you have very much an opposite trend. And particularly in the U.S., There is a sense that government is a problem more than it is a solution. So we live in very different worlds. In the country that I am in South Africa, we recently had local government elections, which created a huge degree of excitement and a sense of change in the country. So we are still struggling for democracy in Africa. But we are not in the sort of post-industrial democratic phase that many of Europe and the US is. So I think entirely different framework within a context within which the electoral process and democracy generally plays out. And for us, democracy remains an elusive goal that we struggle for, that we take seriously. And we look with some dismay at the light-hearted, cavalier approach to elections that seems to be evident when you look at the debates and what's happened the last few months in the U.S.
Iyaki Cilliar is chairman of the board of South Africa's Institute for Security Studies. From Pretoria, he spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua.
As voters select the new U.S. president, American think tanks are busy examining recommendations for policy changes under a new administration. Amy Hawthorne is deputy director for research at the Project on Middle East Democracy. She's issued a new report asking the new president to rethink the U.S. aid to Egypt. VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi asked her about her recommendations.
First of all, I recommend in the paper that the United States should still continue to provide economic aid to Egypt. Some U.S. officials and some in Egypt are making the argument that we should end the aid program entirely. So my first main recommendation is that we should continue the aid, but we should make several changes. First, the United States should make sure that the projects that the U.S. is funding in Egypt provide direct benefits for ordinary Egyptians, not elite Egyptians, and not support for the government. For example, I recommend that the United States should focus more on scholarships, programs to provide immunizations against diseases such as polio, and also on efforts to help create jobs through private sector companies. Secondly, I talk at great length in the paper about the lack of cooperation from the Egyptian government on the assistance program. When the United States, for many years, has tried to fund projects with the Egyptian government to encourage reform, economic reform, political reform, many of these projects have failed, mainly because the Egyptian government is not interested in the reforms and the change that the United States is trying to promote. So a major recommendation that I make in the paper is that the United States, with its aid program, should simply stop doing those kinds of programs, stop working on projects for the benefit of state agencies and government agencies.
Why do you envision a need to improve U.S. public diplomacy when it comes to U.S. economic assistance to Egypt?
Well, I think it is well known that the economic aid program in Egypt is generally quite unpopular, and the economic assistance program in Egypt has always been controversial since the beginning, since the 1970s. On the other hand, there is also a lot of very, very negative, false, inaccurate coverage in the Egyptian media, often the Egyptian state media, that criticizes the aid and makes, you know, really outrageous negative arguments about it, that it's trying to destroy Egypt and infiltrate Egypt and threaten national security, which is ridiculous. Often the U.S. government, on the whole, has not responded to those attacks and, in general, has kept a pretty low profile on the assistance, which has had the problem of letting the narrative about the aid in Egypt be shaped by a lot of people who are very negative about it. But I do think that among those Egyptians who would possibly have an open mind, it would be important for the U.S. to provide more accurate and truthful information about what is being funded with U.S. taxpayer dollars, because many of the programs are very worthwhile, and the United States doesn't always advocate for them very loudly in Egypt. And this leaves space for enemies of the aid program, and I would even say enemies of the United States, to dominate the public discussion.
Emmy Hawthorne is Deputy Director for Research at the Project on Middle East Democracy. She spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy.
You're listening to African News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 20 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top story. It's election day in the United States, and tonight we'll find out if Democrat Hillary Clinton or Republican Donald Trump will be the next U.S. president. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Well, climate risk management is a key focus at the climate conference in Marrakesh, Morocco. Leaders will explore insurance plans offered in developing countries to help smallholder farmers when severe and unexpected weather events occur. Olga Speckhart is head of Global Insurance Solutions at Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture. It's a nonprofit agency that helps small farmers become more professional growers. She's participating in the climate talks in Morocco, providing information on the progress of current insurance programs offered to African farmers. She spoke with me about how farmers can invest in risk reduction for food security.
Our foundation's mission is to modernize small-scale farming in low- and middle-income countries through sustainable intensification, diversification, and the activation of value chains. The foundation incubates scalable products and solutions, tests them, and catalyzes uptake and dissemination through commercial partnerships. And one of our focus areas is agriculture, insurance, and finance. And this is where ACA Africa comes in. ACA Africa was established from a Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture, and up to date, we have been able to insure 800,000 farmers in four countries in East Africa, in Kenya, Rwanda, and Tanzania, and some projects in Uganda. And ACA Africa is a microinsurance product designer, linking stakeholders to agriculture insurance through localized solutions to reduce climate risks and transaction costs. So our products give farmers access to affordable insurance that mitigate their risks and also unlock access to agriculture credit. When I'm talking about affordable insurance, is that traditional insurance is too expensive for smallholder farmers based on indemnity cover. So we have developed an index on weather base. We also have the use of technology platform on board, which is the mobile payment, which also reduces the cost of transaction and the cost of people involved, paperwork, and so on. So our mission is actually to design the best tailor-made product for the smallholder farmer for the most affordable price.
How does this actually work? If you could give an example, for instance, if a farmer experiences a loss of his or her crops from a climate event or an environmental event, then what would they do?
The products we insured are weather index, area yield index, and satellite-based index insurance. The crops are maize, beans, wheat, sorghum, coffee, potatoes. That's the main one. So we have a range of different products. And I'm going to give you just an example of one retail product, very famous, which is the replanting guarantee. The farmers can try out insurance by insuring as little as one bag of seed. Insuring 1 acre of maize against drought costs a farmer $37 cost or 10% of harvest value. So any payout is transferred to the farmer's mobile phone wallet at the end of the season. So in Kenya and Rwanda, where more than 96% of agricultural land is rain-fed and vulnerable to drought and erratic rain, mitigating weather-related risk for smallholder farmers is an important tool also for unlocking credit. The measure of humidity in the soil, this is what triggers the payout. So if there is a 15 millimeters of water on the soil, that is already triggering a payout. So the farmer gets an SMS back to his mobile phone and says, you are already receiving a payout from your insurance partner. It's a very simple product.
What has been the response from farmers so far?
We have some impact figures that we can really communicate publicly. So the impact so far, insured farmers invested 19% more and earned 16% more than the neighboring uninsured counterparts. And also, they increased access to finance. 97% of the farmers insured by acre received loans linked to the insurance. They really believe that this is a protection. This is not only about insurance. We do have capacity building on the ground. We talk to the farmers. We educate them. Why do they need this protection? Why do they need better farming practices? When is the best time for planting and so on? So they see all the value points that we really are trying to put on the table.
Olga Speckhart is head of Global Insurance Solutions at Syngenta Foundation for Sustainable Agriculture. She spoke with me from Switzerland.
Britain says it will give $47 million to help farmers in Zimbabwe cope with a devastating drought. Farmers will be able to access funds through electronic mobile payments. In the nation's current economic crisis, the government has restricted public access to bank withdrawals. The grant will be made available through non-governmental organizations, Care International, and World Vision.
A bomb attack on UN peacekeepers in the eastern DRC this morning killed an 8-year-old child and one peacekeeper. Local officials say 32 other peacekeepers were injured in the blast. 5 are listed in serious condition. The troops were on a morning run in Goma when the roadside bomb exploded. The peacekeepers are from India and are among 18,000 peacekeepers serving in the UN mission in the DRC.
The International Organization for Migration is assessing the health of more than 1,700 migrants in a Libyan detention center. 4 migrants have died in the facility in the last 3 weeks. The Gharian al-Hamra Center is 90 kilometers south of Tripoli. It's operated by Libya's Directorate for Combating Illegal Migration. Meanwhile, in France, the mayor of Paris has inaugurated a new reception center for 400 migrants. The government has established shelters for more than 1,800 migrants who have been removed from Paris and parks since June of last year. And in Hungary, a constitutional amendment opposing future European Union plans to resettle migrants has failed by 2 votes. The bill was promoted by Prime Minister Viktor Orban, a staunch opponent of new migrants. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Curtis Bynum, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
On Tuesday, November 8th, all eyes will be on America as voters choose the next U.S. president. Tune in to our live comprehensive coverage with our correspondents around the country and around the world, starting Tuesday at 2200 hours UTC GMT and continuing through Wednesday morning right here on VOA.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth look at the historic U.S. presidential election and how the results could change the political landscape in the United States. That's right here on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
Savor the flavor of African music. Hi, I'm Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Tune in, feast your ears, and dig in to an hour of amazing Pan-African music, featured interviews, and music news. Music Time in Africa, Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC.